Today on the podcast, I got Jason Brown, who's a full-time stock options trader, and his best day alone is 400K. Since then, he's coached 10,000 traders from single moms with $500 to getting their first five-figure account, and he's all over YouTube, 80,000 subscribers, and we're pumped to have him. So thank you for being here, Jason.
Matthew, thanks for having me, man. Excited to chat.
Yeah, I'm super pumped. So let's talk about humble beginnings. You know, what was life like before the markets?
Yeah, so life before the markets for me, I'm born and raised Detroit, Michigan, grew up to, you know, my mother in a single family household. And we pretty much grew up poor. And when I say poor, like, we had love. I always like to say we had love. We felt safe, so to speak. But, you know, when I look at the finances, I could tell that, you know, we didn't really have any money. And when I think about, you know, when I first started realizing we didn't have any money, like, I went to my friend's house. I remember I was like, I don't know, 7, 8 years old, something like that. And I was like, man, you have a bed. And he was like, of course I have a bed. I was like, well, we sleep in sleeping bags. And I thought beds was only for grownups. And so that's what I mean by growing up poor. We lived in a neighborhood with bars on the window, people breaking in, stealing your cars. And at that young age, I started realizing there was a difference between, you know, the type of money we had and other people just from, number one, not having a bed. But then as I got older, I saw, you know, maybe because my friends had two parents that they had, you know, two incomes, but I saw my mom work two jobs and we still never really got ahead in life. And so, you know, I grew up and when I turned 18, I was always looking for ways to make some money so we could get out of the neighborhood and change our financial situation. And so I'm 18 years old and I always hear about like invest in the stock market. That's what rich people do. And so I took $2,000 of my graduation money when I graduated from high school. And I was like, I'm going to open a trading account. And you always hear these stories where they're like, put $2,000, if you'd have put $2,000 away in 20 years ago, it would be worth $1.2 million. So I'm like, I don't know how it works, but why doesn't everybody just put $2,000 away when they're 18? And so that's what I did. And then I came back, you know, 2-3 years later, I'm 21 years old. And I'm like, all right, let me check on my investment account. And they lost $1,300 of my money. And so that was my first like experience with the stock market. I was like, wow, I thought you go to the professionals because they don't lose money. And so when I found out they lose money, I remember telling the lady, I was like, I could have lost my own money. And so I took the $700 that was left and I was like, I'll invest this on my own. And this is when I started my journey of my own going into the stock market. So I'm working a job. I'm working at Sprint PCS. I'm making $8 an hour selling cell phones on the weekend. And I'm just hating my life. I'm missing all my friends. I'm missing all the events because I work retail. I work all the weekends. We open till 9 o'clock. You got to clean up. You're there to 10. So I'm missing everything. And I'm like, man, something's got to change. So I'm like, I got the 700 bucks. I spent $200 and bought some shoes to make me feel better about them losing $1,300. And so I do what most people do. I don't know if you've ever experienced this. I'm like, I'm going to buy stock in the company I work for, which was Sprint. And Sprint stock was $5 a share. So I had 500 left. I could buy 100 shares. And I was just like, if it could just move 50 cents, then I won't have to work weekends. Because every time it moves 50 cents, I make $50. And I'm like, if I could do that every week, I make $50. I won't have to work weekends. As soon as I bought Sprint at 5, man, I'm telling you, Matthew, it fell to 4. I'm like, okay, this doesn't work. Like, maybe it is harder than I think. Stock went back up to 5. I'm like, okay, just needed to go to 550 so I can break even. Went right back down to 4. Now I'm pissed. I'm like, the stock market's rigged. I felt like it was a man behind the curtain with a microphone. Like, don't let it go to 550. Like, send it back down. You know, that's how you feel sometimes. And so, you know, the most ironic thing happened. It went back up to 5. And I just said, I've seen this before. I was like, so I'm going to get out at 5. It fell down to 4. I got in. It went back up to 5. I got out. I made my first $100. That was my first introduction into like understanding that there's patterns to the market. So I spent the next 6 months just studying these patterns. I'm like, what other patterns do I not know about? Because that pattern was called a channel in stock. So I'm like, well, what other patterns don't I know about? I get really good at identifying these patterns, which I later coined the three most profitable patterns. And then I actually was like, how do I get more money into the stock market? Because I had got good at working that $500. And I was like, man, if I had $5,000, what if I had $10,000? I'd be rich. So I had a scholarship to Mike Illich School of Business, Wayne State University, downtown Detroit. I applied for a student loan because I knew they would double pay the account and I would get a refund. I took the $10,000 student loan refund and I grew it to over $100,000 in the stock market as a 21-year-old college student. And so that was literally like my first foray into the stock market.
Wow. How long did it take you to hit that level of six figures?
It was like 9 months. It wasn't long at all. It was like 9 months.
Using stock or options?
Options. I always started with options because when I only had $500, I was like, how do I control or buy some of the bigger stocks? And that's when I learned about options. And so I took that and understood that I can control the better stocks if I use options. And I didn't really care about owning it and collecting a dividend. I was just trying to take advantage of the price movement. And so I was able to grow at that rapidly using options.
Yeah, it's nuts. So how did your life change? Like, because that was literally like life-changing money. And you were smart using your tuition or your
student loan.
Yeah, that's incredibly genius. So what was life-changing money like that doing for you?
Yeah, well, first, let me explain why I use the student loans, because I think it's important for people to understand my mindset. I did a podcast on my own platform, and it was called I Hated My Life. And so, like, I hated working weekends. I hated living in a community with bars on the window. I hated people breaking in and stealing our cars. So in my mind, I was like, if I take this $10 student loan, if this works, I'm out of here. I'm rich. I'm out of the neighborhood. And I was like, if I'm wrong, I'll do what everybody else is doing. I have to pay it back over 30 years with a low interest rate. So to me, the risk was like not doing it was more riskier than doing it. Because if I did it and didn't work, I was like, I'll just pay back a little bit over time like everybody else. So how did my life change? Number one, we moved out the neighborhood. At least I moved out the neighborhood. When I made that money, I actually dropped out of school. So I was in my, I graduated when I was like 18. I'm 21 at this point. I'm 3 years into college. And what I realized was like people were getting an engineering degree, which is kind of big here in Michigan with the automotive. And I was like, I made six figures not working. And so I wanted to put more of my time into the stock market and learn how that works. So I dropped out of school. I moved out to the suburbs. I buy a Lexus GS300, put it on 20-inch rims, some of the best furniture, just bachelor pad, everything a young 21-year-old with money, just kind of really not blowing the money, but definitely spending it like it'll never run out. And so I'm full-time day trading. At that point, I was day trading. I go full-time day trading for 3 years. I'm making about $100,000 every year for the next 2 years. So I go into year three with about $300,000, roughly $250,000, because I was spending some money and stuff like that. And I'm like, I'm going to buy a condo downtown Royal Oak, Michigan, and I'm going to pay cash for it. So I actually risk $250,000 trying to make $500,000, and I actually lose it all. I lost all my money, and jeez, I had to move back home with my mother and in the same place that I hated. It was one of the most painful experiences in this world. And your audience, or you may even be thinking, well, how did you get to where you're at today? So after taking my lumps and moving back home, I was like, I can't be the only person that's ever lost money. And I knew the stock market worked because I had been making $100,000 for like 2-3 years in a row.
Yeah.
And so I was like, man, I got to get back into the game. And so I had this crazy idea. I was like, I'm going to record myself making the money back. That's actually how I started my YouTube channel. I was like, I'm going to record and blog myself making the money back. And I'm going to show people how to kind of get back up after getting knocked down. And so that's how I actually started the channel and got back into the investment game and grew my account in a more public fashion.
How long ago was this?
This was, I think I went broke in like 2000, maybe 2008, something like that.
Oh, okay.
And then I grew it back from about 2008 to 2013. And then I've been like full time trading and running the business since about 2000, maybe 2015, I went full time.
Wow. Yeah, you've been doing this a long time. Did you have to get a job at some point?
Are you a full-time entrepreneur? No, I actually had to go back to work. So that was a humbling experience for me, because when I lost all that money, I was like, I got to go back and do the only thing I know how to do, which is sell cell phones. So I actually got a job at Verizon Wireless. And so my thought process was, I'm going to get a job where I can live off the hourly and I can invest my commission. And so I went into commission sales, had a nice hourly wage, and then my commissions I was using to get back into the stock market and pay down some debt. I also, at that time, since I dropped out of school, I was like, I wanted to get a job that had tuition reimbursement, because I couldn't get financial aid again at this point. And so I actually was like, but now I know what I want to be. Like, I want to get a degree in finance. So I went back to school to get my degree in finance. Verizon paid for it all the time while I'm working and also trying to build back up my trading account. So like I said, as I'm building up the trading account, I'm working. I'm also recording myself, make the money back. And that's when I started the YouTube channel. And then people started like making money off of my, before people started making money off my blogs, I had made a lot of the money back, but then I started losing it again. And then I was like, I don't know if I really know what I know, or was I lucky? And so I took a course. I was just like, let me just take a course and make sure I really understand it. So make sure I'm not missing anything. And so when I took the course, I did learn a few little things, but I eventually got as good as the coach. And then I was like, well, why don't they explain it like this so that regular, everyday, average people can understand it? And so then people was like, man, can you teach me? And that's when I had my genius idea, because I had learned how to get $100,000 in an account by just working the job and using tuition reimbursement and all that stuff and student loan refunds. But I'm like, man, how do you get like $1 million in the account? And so I was like, man, if I could teach people how this works and find the trades that I already found for myself and share it with them, I was like, that could be my opportunity to get, you know, millions into the trading account. So that's when I started to go the entrepreneurial route. I built the business while I was working my full-time job, because it was a way to be accountable to my trades by sharing them with other people. It was a way to make extra money to put into the stock market. And then between the investing and the business, I eventually was able to walk away from corporate America.
Congrats, man. And then what year did you hit that million in your account?
So that was 2000. It wasn't that long ago. We're in 2003 right now, 23 right now. It might have been like 2000. It's probably 4 years ago, like 2019. I did a video about it, or a podcast about it, because, you know, I was like, I didn't realize that I was a millionaire. And like, people think like when you become a millionaire, there's like, it's not like winning the lottery or playing basketball or sport and they cut you a big check. I had, you know, been building an account, $200,000, $300,000. Then I had that $400,000 trade. Then I had was paying off the house. And then I kind of like took a step back and like, was like, whoa, like I added it up. I think I had to do something from my accountant, or when we paid it off, I was just like, whoa, I didn't realize like we hit a million, like we're a millionaire. So it was kind of anticlimactic, but that's how I realized I was there, was when we paid off the house and making that last trade of 400,000. I was just like, oh snap. Like I sent the money out the path. I was like, wow, we have $1 million.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we got to hear this 400K trade. So it sounds incredible.
So with the $400,000 trade, you know, it's one of them things where like when you're studying and you're following the market, like you're just in tune with a stock, you're in tune with the market. And so I was in tune with, it happened with DocuSign actually. And so I was just in tune with the market and with what they were doing with digital signatures and stuff like that. And I put like $220,000 into options on DocuSign. And then it did what I thought it was going to do. Well, before that, Zoom had popped. And then I was like, well, they're in the same space, the whole online transformation, digital transformation. So I was like so in tune with the sectors, the industries, and then what Zoom did, what they reported. I was like, DocuSign is about to blow. And sure enough, like the charts, the fundamentals, the technicals, everything added up. And when I made 400 grand, I sold it. And, you know, because, you know, that's why I'm wearing a shirt. You never go broke taking a profit. I remember the time where I risked $250,000 to make $500,000 and lost it. So some of my quotes come from my life lessons. Like, we're not going to play that game this time. You never go broke taking a profit. Let's take some money off the table. Let's raise our floor by paying off the house. Because, again, I'm married with two kids now. There's no way we can move back to my mom's house. And so I believe in like raising your floor to where if something happens to me or my trading account, like we kind of have our life secure. We'll have a lake house. We have no debt. We have no student loans. Our other cars are paid off. So, you know, that's kind of how I look at life now after making a bunch of money, losing it, making it back, starting to lose a little, then building a business and getting to where I'm at now. But that $400,000 trade, you know, I look at it like it's just one of many. I haven't had a trade like that again, but I have done over $100,000 in a day on several trades and also recorded them and posted them on YouTube just because I've always had a history of recording myself way back when I was 21.
Yeah, that's so cool. You had that whole journey from years ago. So with your huge wins, like, what's your mentality trading and your strategy? Because it seems like your opportunities may not even come weekly or daily. Like, do you hit it like once a month, or what's your style like in the markets?
So that's a good question, because I kind of coined my own style, and my style is called power trading, which is why we call it Power Trades University. It's because like we're not day trading, and we're not necessarily swing trading, or it's a hybrid version of swing trading. It's like we're looking for what I like to call predictable, repeatable patterns. And once those predictable, repeatable patterns show up, I like to put power behind my trade, whether that's buying a ton of options or buying a ton of shares and selling options against it, or using covered puts, covered calls. I just have these option strategies that I use once we see the predictable, repeatable pattern. And I like to put a lot of power behind it. You know, for example, at the time of this recording, I had bought 2,000 shares of Tesla and caught a nice move up and made like 60,000 in 5 days, sold it, brought the money back home. So to your point, it's not about trading every day or over trading or hyper trading or waking up every day like I got to do something like I'm a fiend for the market. It's really about controlling your emotions and picking your shots and picking high probability, low risk setups. And like you said, those don't come every single day. And so yeah. I think a big misconception when people talk to people like me is like, I bet you trade every day. I bet you stressed out every day. I'm like, no. If you look at my Instagram, I was just hanging out at Starbucks. I was out with my kids, because there's not something to do every day.
Yeah,
so the rest of the time I feel it trying to help people or podcasts or shoot YouTube videos and stuff like that.
Yeah. So with your, you don't have to share the actual strategies, but what's your process like scanning for these things? Is it like 10 stocks and you just wait patiently? Like what's that process look like?
Yeah. And like we said, before we start recording, no questions off limit. I don't mind sharing the strategies. What I love about the stock market is you can share the strategies with somebody and it doesn't matter, because the market's big enough for all of us. Like, you know, it doesn't stop me from going to do it. So I have a couple different strategies. So one of the strategies, well, first of all, how do I find the stocks? So I have one approach where I do what's called a top-down approach, where I'll look at the S&P 500, then I'll drill down to all the sectors that make up the S&P 500, and then I'll drill down to the individual stocks. So that's one way that I find the stocks. And I usually have 5 stocks from each category. So one from, you know, healthcare, tech, consumer staples. And I usually have like 50, that's how I come up with like my 50 stock watch list. So that's one way that I find them. And then I kind of have, those are like my staples. Like I kind of always know what's going on with those five in each category. That's one way. I also wrote some scans where it's like, I'm looking for Bollinger Band breakouts. I may be looking for moving averages crossing. I may be looking for MACD to be oversold or overbought. So I'll also scan sometimes to find things that wouldn't have come up on my radar. They might not even be stocks that are in the S&P 500. Then I have to say, do I see a predictable, repeatable pattern? What do they do? Are any lawsuits about to come up? Like anything that can just throw my trade off. Is the Fed speaking this week? Is, you know, something about to happen with Russia and Ukraine? So then I'll do my fundamental analysis. Then I'll do my my practical analysis, meaning like, is there any world events or news events that could throw it off? Earnings, anything like that? And then only then I go look at the options and say, okay, do I like the option chains? Is there enough open interest? And then I kind of make a decision if I want to put some skin in the game on that stock.
Yeah, typically, you know, 200K a position, like when you find your opportunity, your power heavy, like what's the heaviness?
So, I mean, with Tesla, I had $500,000 into that trade, but only 250,000 was my money. I had sold a covered put, stock got put to me. Technically, they loaned me the other half on margin, but when the market opened Monday, and Tuesday it popped, then I sold and took mine out. So I had about $250,000, but that's the type of power that I'm putting behind the trade. So that $250,000 with another $250,000 leverage was able to bring me 60,000. So, but of my money, that was a little bit over 20% return in 5 days. So that's the type of power that I'll put up. I have a trade going right now. I don't believe in luck or anything like that, but I got like 4,000 shares of AMD. I shouldn't say luck. I don't believe in karma. I think the market's going to, I usually be like, I don't want to talk about it till it's over, but
oh, okay.
I got like 4,000 shares in AMD. So I'm sitting on like 400 grand in the shares. I'm looking for a $5 to $10 move on that. And then, my goal is to be out before earnings, but willing to hold over earnings just with everything that's going on with AI. So like, again, the computing power, people need server space, they're going to need chips. We're not at the peak of AI. We're just at the beginning. It's not like, oh, this is all we're going to do with AI. It's only going to need more computing power, more processing. So things like that, I put a lot of power behind different sectors and industries where I believe that's where the future is moving and that's where the investments are coming. So that's like a $400,000 trade right now for me. And we'll see how it matures or materializes over the next weeks, months, et cetera.
Yeah, that's insane. And can you sleep at night with that much money on the line?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got to understand, number one, my lifestyle, I don't owe anybody anything. Our house is paid off. So we're not in a position where like, if we lose it all, what are we going to do? Number two, you got to understand the industry and the sector and the companies. That's just one. But in order for me to lose all my money, they would have to go out of business. What are the chances that one of the second largest companies behind NVIDIA that makes semiconductors and gaming chips and AI chips are going to go out of business in a time where investment is pouring into a sector like artificial intelligence, Bitcoin and crypto mining and, all the server processing power that they need. So when you understand the sector, the industry and what's going on, you know, it'd be like worrying about if Amazon's going to go out of business tomorrow. It's like, I mean, what's the chances of that happening? So I think when people worry, it's because they haven't done the research, or they have put more money than they can afford to lose into a trade. For me, that's not, I don't plan on losing it, but if for some odd reason, they just, a rocket fell on their company tomorrow, I'd still be okay.
Yeah. I mean, cause the last 12 months, we've just seen the tech and growth sector just not respond well to anything. So this is like coming out of that, but you know, if you were betting on an AMD last year, you'd have to wait almost, 6 to 8 months to have your shares come to break even. So
Absolutely. Yeah.
Are you worried about like another 6 to 8 month waiting period?
No, because when you look at the charts, right? If you think about, you know, now we go into macro and microeconomics, but you figure inflation is starting to come down, so that's not a worry. The Russia-Ukraine war is already baked in. The bank failures, we've already seen the fallout from that, which is what caused the, you know, the biggest sell-off. We've already seen the Fed raise interest rates, which they're closer to being done than they are to raising more. They already had their first pause. Next is going to be like we're done or we're cutting interest rates. So the horizon doesn't really show anything that is going to send the markets back down. Now, could something happen? There's always something that can happen. That's why the market has natural risk associated with it. But there's nothing that's in our peripheral that says we should be scared right now. And then if you look at, like, I got my chart up of AMD. I mean, if you look, AMD sold off from the 164 level. So, I mean, just looking at that, we're still 48 points away from the all-time high. So we're not buttoned up against resistance either. And so, you know, I think the more research you do, the more confident you can be about your trades or investments. And people are listening to this. I am not telling you to invest in AMD because I'm in it. I'm saying that's just one of the companies that I've researched the industry where we're at and looked at the macro and microeconomic environments. And I feel comfortable putting that type of capital to work. But the more you read the charts, the more you do your research, that's all you can do. There's no way you can remove 100% of the risk, but you can, you know, ask yourself, is this a high probability setup?
I think what you said is different than what most people even understand is like macroeconomics is like a huge bonus if you can invest and trade with it. And I don't think anybody understands how to do that due diligence you just said in like 3 seconds. I mean, interest rates are pausing. You have inflation flattening. Like recognizing that really helps you set up the trade for the 3-6 month out period. So I think every trader needs to understand macros. And that's something we haven't heard on this podcast, which is really cool.
Yeah. And once you start, I mean, it's so important to understand how that stuff works because then you can start to predict what the next move is or where the money is going to go next. And when you start to understand that, you start to be like, ooh, okay, if they're going to buy treasury bonds or stop buying them, like, what does that mean? Who gets affected by that? If they're going to pause student loans, what does that mean? Okay, they're turning student loans back on. Who's going to be affected by that? And you can really start to see where your money ideally should be flowing and who's going to be a beneficiary of that.
Yeah. So like last year with interest rate climbs and inflation climbing, like were you positioning differently? Were you recognizing that as a little, you know, nerve wracking time to take a, you know, longs on the market?
No. So I trade put options too. So we were short Zillow. We were short a lot of the real estate company because I'm like, they about to get hammered. Yeah. And then if you think about it, we started to short Zoom. We started to short DocuSign, even though those were some of our biggest winners. Because think about it. If you understand the economics, what did those companies do? They pulled forward 5-10 years worth of business. Business that they wasn't supposed to get till 2030. Everybody jumped on Zoom. Everybody jumped on DocuSign. So what happened? Stocks went up. Well, if you understand, if everybody, even your grandmother was like, I'll do a Zoom. Churches were on Zoom. Okay. So if they pulled ahead all that demand, who's left to sign up for it?
Yeah.
Nobody. So guess what? They start losing customers, right? They couldn't keep up with those wild earnings. And those stocks started slowly but surely coming down and crashing because there was nobody left to buy a Zoom account. There was only people left to cancel their Zoom account once the world opened back up. Because they're like, I'm tired of Zoom. I want to meet people face to face. So you got people tired of it and you got everybody and their mama got an account. Where was the growth going to come from? Easy to see the put options that you should have had on that. When you start thinking 2-3 steps ahead.
Well, I mean, also like to what we're just talking about, the macro, like if we think inflation's nonstop and interest rates are nonstop. Like, that's pressure on growth that makes people not want to own it, devalues future earnings. So like that macro, you could have just played that without even looking at the numbers of Zoom, you know, PE obviously, but I think your macro analysis is on point. Even the intra-company analysis is on point too. So you got this from like finance degree or just years in the market?
Just years in the market and just really having times where I'm like, they beat earnings, but the stock sold off. What does that mean? Or they said this, but the world is closed. How come stocks are going up if the world is closed? And starting to realize like what happens when they pump money into the economy. A lot of times it's counter to what you think. It's like the world is shut down. Everything's over. All the stocks are going to zero. And then they go to their all time highs that they've ever been. And you're like, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. And it's like, because you're thinking about it from a consumer perspective, you got to step back and ask like, okay, what does all the stimulus mean? Okay, people got more money to shop. People got student loans paused. Okay, now when people, they got to pay people extra money to even come in to work because they don't want to work because it's a hazard. There's so much money being pumped into the economy now. Yeah. What do all those people typically do? Go shopping, buy iPhones, go to Home Depot, fix up their homes while they're stuck at home. And so you start to think like, man, I can benefit from those companies. Everybody in the world was ordering off Amazon. So what do you think the Amazon stock did? I mean, you were just getting stuff delivered to your doorstep. Their stock was skyrocketing. So it's counter to what you think. You think like the world's over. It's like, no, it's a great time to invest. And you're like, how could you say that? The world's closed. And then you think like all these restaurants are going to do horrible. And then it's like, how come restaurants are killing it? Because everybody's doing takeout. They're tired of cooking. They don't know how to cook. You know, like, like the opposite of what you think is going to happen is how the market works. A lot of times it's counterintuitive to what you believe is going to happen. And so I try to train my brain to ask myself, like, what am I missing? And like, what if this is actually a good thing versus a bad thing? And you know, having that type of question into myself allows me to break free of the fear that they're pumping into you on TV and the news and start to think like, how do I profit from this?
Yeah. It's a huge example. Everyone that's listening, you know, needs to understand that like a moving average crossover is less meaningful than what you just said. Like that could be the most meaningful trade trigger or reason to get in a trade is to really understand, like you said, like, hey, everybody's at home. They don't want to cook. Like even though everything's shut down, they're probably going to be ordering Uber Eats. Like that company should be doing well. Like it's way better than a moving average crossover. Like
exactly.
You have to have a little bit more reasoning behind these swing trades, especially we've seen a lot of swing trades just fail over the last year. Setups weren't working. Like, engulfing candles were failing. The market was gapping like the complete opposite way the next day. So that macro is powerful.
It's super powerful because when you mix that with technical analysis, you have a way better theory and probability that the stock is going to do what you think it's going to do.
Yeah, I love that. One thing I did want to harp on is because you are kind of in this position that I think most people, we're programmed as humans to think in like a scarcity mindset, but you were like in a sleeping bag growing up and now you're millionaire. Like, how do you get out of a scarcity mindset and like forget like what it was like, you know, when you were growing up to be more comfortable and less afraid now when you're living your best life, you know?
Yeah. And man, I don't think anybody's ever asked me that on the podcast. And, you know, to be completely transparent with, you know, you and the listeners, like even to this day, I have a therapist. I talk to stuff about that. Stuff still haunts me to this day. I know you don't know me, my backstory, but like when I first made $100,000 as a 21-year-old college student, my mom, when I called and told her, she said, "You're not going to quit your job, are you? Because that might not last." It wasn't congratulations, son. It wasn't good job. It wasn't keep going. It wasn't can you do it again? Can you show me how to do it? It wasn't I'm proud of you. It was you're not gonna quit your job because that might not last. So like we still dealing with scars of growing up, you know, not poor just from money, poor because our, you know, my mom's from Mississippi, from the cotton picking South. And so what we believe is possible seems like hocus pocus to her. You know, she just like, you could be a stock trader, like boy, please. Versus like, you could be whatever you want. It's like, quit playing, like don't quit your day job. And so like, I have to battle within my, I mean, I don't live with my mom now, but I had to battle within my own household of like, I just made 100 grand. You still don't believe in me. And so, yeah. You know, we still got scars and stuff. We trying to break generational curses. You know, just to give you another example, when we moved into this house, we bought a house on the lake here in Michigan. And even though I was doing well, part of me was like, what if I lose this house? Like, what if I lose it all again and have to move back home? And so that fear, I use it to drive me, which is why I used it to trade. And then I took that money and paid off the house. So now I try to use that fear to push me. I remember when I paid off the house, I then bought a Ferrari. And one of the reasons I bought a Ferrari, when I bought the Ferrari, I was nervous to buy the Ferrari because I was like, you know, am I doing what stupid people do with money? Right. But then I was hearing about people who are like, well, these cars hold value. Sometimes they appreciate in value. But I was like, am I being stupid? And I was like, well, I could be stupid since I paid off the house and I secured the family. But my point is, I was scared to buy the Ferrari, even though I was debt free, had over $1 million, house paid off, had a business, big investment account. That fear of like, can I still afford this? Can I really afford this? And I remember buying it saying like, I'm going to choose like wealth over fear, meaning like I plan to be wealthy for a long time. So I will figure out a way to pay for it. And that was my mindset when I bought it. Now, fast forward, I actually ended up selling the car for $30,000 more than I bought it for. So I'm glad I ignored the fear or I went forward anyway. But I'm sharing that to say like the fear still comes up like at different points in my life. I don't think it ever really goes away. And you just, you know, sometimes a little bit of fear is healthy. And you also got to make sure you got the right mental help, therapist, spouse, friends to talk through some of this stuff to, you know, that's not the stuff you get on YouTube and talk about. It's not sexy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I grew up just, my mom was just always a discount bargain hunter. You know, I wasn't poor, but like, you know, we're doing okay. And we're still like getting things off the sale rack and buying the food on this that's a little cheaper for X, Y, or Z reason. But I have that like even today, and I want to save like $5 here and there. But I can't imagine where you were. Like, that's the most, like it's the highest reason to have that scarcity mindset. And, you know, I have it, but I couldn't imagine what it was like in your head. So I appreciate you being open about that. And I ran professionally for a couple of years, and there's this like nervousness before a race and like a fear, like I won't be able to do it. But that's like that keeps you on the edge of being prepared too. Like you said, you can use it for you to make yourself better. And yeah, I mean, I've had it in running, I've had it in business and in trading, and it's a good thing to use the fear properly. And I think being without fear is, you probably wouldn't be as successful. You know, that's a driving factor for sure.
Absolutely. And like fear, you know, it also humbles you, because like I remember, like I'm not old, like it wasn't that long ago when when I was, you know, sleeping in sleeping bags and made money, lost it all and had to move back home. Like that wasn't that long ago. And I like to tell people, I've been poor more long, when I look at my lifespan, I've been poor longer than I've had money. So I'm still adjusting to like, we're okay, we're doing fine. I remember my therapist was like, like, you're okay. Like, now you have to do the personal work. Cause I'm always like, I gotta grind. I gotta look at these stocks. I gotta build the business. I gotta do this. And she's like, you're okay. But now we need to work on you. But I'm like, my mind knows that I'm like my, it's like, I don't know which one. It's like my mind knows I'm okay, but my body was still traumatized. Like, I still felt like I had to work, grind, like hustle hard. And I felt like every day I could lose it all. And I'm like, you are the furthest from losing it all right now. But I felt like every day I could lose it all. And you know, a little bit of it was healthy. You ask my wife, I'm a little bit of a workaholic. But we all got our battles, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you got to love it. You wouldn't be putting in this time if it wasn't enjoyable, and the lives you're changing are better for it. So, you know, it's okay to sacrifice a little of your life for a greater good, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like we said, before we cut the mic on, I was just like, man, more people need to hear how the stock market works and hear like the realness instead of, you know, this Reddit forum, try to get rich overnight, GameStop, AMC stuff that people get kind of sucked into.
Yeah. And since we're on like the topics of all this, I guess, more downy stuff, like when you had trouble trading the markets, how did you get over that? Like, I know you've been trading for a while. You must have struggled for like maybe a couple months or a whole year. What was that like going through that? Because most new traders, you know, will hit that path. Even after a great streak, you know, they're going to get humbled by the markets.
Yeah. And I'll show you, I'm doing a book club right now, and we're going through Think and Grow Rich. I'm leading the book club, and this is the book that I recommended we go through with a group of just traders and entrepreneurs and stuff. And my mindset is what helped me. Like, I try to apply the principles in Think and Grow Rich to my life, even when things are going wrong, because it's like, did you fail or did you learn a smarter way to start again? And some people be like, you know, I don't want to hear all that cliche stuff, but that's the stuff that gets you through in the tough moments. Like, did I really fail or did I learn a smarter way to start again? I look at stuff like, you know, I say like, I personally is like, I want a $10 million trading account. I don't have a $10 million trading account right now. I was like, I want a $10 million trading account. I'm like, well, in order for Warren Buffett to become a billionaire, he had to lose his first 100,000. He probably lost his first million. He probably lost his first 10 million on his way to a billionaire. And so for me, I'm like, well, if you're going to have a $10 million account, you'll probably lose your first 100,000. You'll probably lose your first million. And so just knowing that that's part of the process of where I'm going, I don't get knocked off my horse. Cause I'm like, if Warren Buffett stops, then he never becomes Warren Buffett. He never becomes a billionaire. He never becomes one of the most powerful men in the world. So like, you could stop, but you never become Warren Buffett. Or for me, I never become Jason Brown. I never become a $10 million account. And who knows what happens if I get the $10 million account? Do I grow it to 100 million? If I grow it to 100 million, what does that mean for the opportunities for my kids? What schools they want to go to? Maybe they want to start philanthropy and bring clean water to Kenya or somewhere. Like, the fact that they won't have to worry about, but I got to get a job versus follow my passion. Like, that's the stuff where I'm like, if I stop, I never get to figure out what that looks like. And so when I have a bad month, week, year, whatever, I'm thinking generations down the line. And so one bad year, it's like, okay, you know, Jim Rohn says it. I don't know if you listen to Jim Rohn, the motivational speaker. He passed away, but he says the farmer plants a crop and then this year a tornado or a storm comes. He's like, should the farmer not plant seeds and crop again next spring and summer? He's like, he plants again next summer and a tornado comes again. He's like, sometimes the winter comes and it's longer than you expected, but should he plant again in the spring and summer? It's like, absolutely. Because more often than not, if the farmer plants some seeds, he will have a harvest. And that's how I look at it. Like, could you go out here and get in a car accident? Yeah. Do you stop driving the car? It's like, No, but only in the stock market, we felt like you lost some money. I don't know if this is made for me or not. And so I just had that mentality like, look, bad things happen. Things don't always go your way. You don't just come out and hit a home run all the way to the top. That's just part of life. But does that mean you should stop investing and playing in one of the most powerful industries and ways to generate money for you and your family? You should absolutely not give up on that. You should start again and start smarter.
Yeah. And is there a type of person or like someone that should give up? Because I think a lot of people don't learn from their lessons. And I've had people that they're down 100K. They don't give up. They're down 300K. They don't give up. They're down 4-5. So what do you say to the people that are consistently struggling and maybe they're not making the right decisions coming back?
So there's a difference between giving up and there's a difference between not giving up and losing money and losing money because you haven't learned your lesson. Those are two different things. And so a person who should give up is a person who is not going to be committed to learning this industry. They're committed to gambling. They're committed to guessing. They're committed to treating it like it's a lottery ticket. You should give up. Just go down to the casino, have fun, go play the lottery, have a little fun. A person who's lost some money, that person, it's not time to give up. Some of my best principles came from losing money. The reason we put never go broke, taking a profit on a shirt, when I lost that $250,000, I was actually up $100,000. But because it wasn't $500,000, I was like, that's not enough. I'm buying a condo cash. And that's where I learned, like, you never go broke taking a profit. Some of my mindset, my things I've learned to get me to where I'm at now is because I lost and then I learned from it. And so I would say that person probably hasn't learned from it. They should take a break from trading. One of the things I used to do, I would draw up my trade. I would put what time I entered the trade. I would put what time I exited. I was looking for patterns. I was like, I am not a good trader in the morning. So one of my rules is I place my trades between 3 and 4 o'clock. I always place them between 3 and 4 o'clock because I want to see how the market closes. Because I noticed I would jump in the morning, be excited. It was up. By the end of the day, it was down. I noticed that I would be in the trade. It was down in the morning. I panic and get out. By the end of the day, it reversed and went back positive. So now I typically don't trade until between three and four o'clock because I noticed I am not a good trader between like not the opening rotation and lunchtime. So I'm saying that to say, I took my losses and my lumps and bruises. Like, what are the rules I should put around my trading and so that this doesn't happen again? So all my trading rules wasn't stuff I read in the book. It was stuff I experienced. So that person needs to kind of take a step back and realize, like, maybe you're not a good day trader. Maybe you're not a good swing trader. If they're like, I always buy options and they expire. Great. What is that telling you? Maybe you should be a seller of options. So that it's expiring as profit to you and the other person buying it is the one losing the money. So there's always a different perspective. And if they just don't ever pause and look at the perspective and say, what is life trying to teach me? What is my trading trying to teach me about myself? Then they're going to continue to make the mistakes and they're going to confuse that with, I should give up. I'm not a good trader. It's like, no, you should give up because you're not listening. You're not looking at what the market is trying to tell you. You're not good at that skill, or you're, every time you buy right, there's the wrong time to buy. So why don't you reverse it? Why don't you buy every time you think you should sell and sell every time you think you should buy? Like, what is the market trying to tell you?
Yeah, that data is huge. And I guess that analysis is what people are most likely too lazy to do. And that's what gets you to the next level, is doing what the lazy people won't do. So
yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to wrap it up. We'll keep it under an hour. But moving on, like, as you amass this wealth and try to hit the 10 million, like, do you have any other avenues to grow your money, or are you going to be solely focused on trading it?
So I believe in multiple streams of income. I think everybody should have multiple streams of income. Again, when I lost my trading account, I had no other streams of income. So I was left with moving back home. I'm smarter than that now with a family. And it's like, okay, we have our trading. We have our trading business. We have our YouTube channel that brings in revenue from ad revenue. also own another company called Metro Detroit Network, and where we throw networking events for entrepreneurs around Metro Detroit. I have my real estate license for, you know, sometimes I look for flips. I like to look for houses on my own without needing a realtor to save on commission. I mean, so there's just several things that I have my hands in, but like my primary focus is like the stock market business and the business of investing, but I also have multiple streams of income that pour into the household. It just makes sense. You know, people, I always laugh at people who are like, if you're so good at trading, why do you teach it? Why do you sell a course? And I'm thinking, well, who do you want to teach you? Somebody that's a failure? Like, wouldn't you want someone that's good at it to teach you? Like, that's a dumb question. Like, it doesn't make sense. And it's like, you always hear, if you could get paid to work your passion, why wouldn't you? It's like, I get paid to work in my passion. So why wouldn't I get paid to work in my passion?
Yeah, I always... It's just a common thing people say that is just, it's so common people don't think, and it's like so ignorant. It's just incredible how it just keeps getting repeated, but it makes no sense. And like, I would say like, you know, you never would walk up to Michael Jordan and be like, you know, if you could play basketball so well, why would you sell basketball shoes? Like,
right.
Like Michael Jordan is a brand. He's a legend, and he can make the world a better place. You know, when people put on his shoes, the kids feel better. They feel more confident. Like,
exactly. He's
using his brand and reach to change the world. I think you're doing the same thing. Everybody has the ability to use their brand. And
absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a bad coach and you were coaching people, you're teaching them a lesson about hiring a bad coach. And like, if they learn that lesson, it's more valuable to them than, you know, everything out there. So if there are bad coaches and good coaches, the market will decide who they are. And at the end of the day, the good coaches will rise and the bad coaches will fall. So
absolutely. And what I love about the business is I'm incentivized for you to do well. I want my students talking about how much money they made. Not I joined that guy and all I did was lose money. Like, I'm incentivized for you to do well. I want to put you on YouTube or on camera and tell the world how great of a trade you just closed and how you didn't know what you were doing. So people don't realize, like, true coaches are incentivized to see you do well. They want to see you do well. There's nothing more proud to say, like, that was one of my students. Wow, I helped them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's huge. Well, that's all I got. I was really happy. You know, we connected. I think this podcast has huge value bombs that not many of the other ones have had. And I think it's great to open up these windows of, you know, macro analysis, your highs and lows, and your journey is very unique. So I appreciate you so much for sharing that, Jason.
Yeah, I appreciate you for having me on. And I don't know if you do links and stuff in the bio, but if people want to learn more about me, I hope it's okay that they just look up the Brown Report. I'm Jason Brown. I'm the Brown Report everywhere. Instagram, YouTube, just the Brown Report.
Yeah, no, it's highly acceptable. So we'll drop your links in the descriptions of the episodes, podcasts. And if you want to find Jason, just head there. If you want to talk about your services, you can too. Let them know, like, maybe what to look for or what to sign up for.
Yeah. You know, I would say we have two things that people can get access to completely for free. One is the stock option starter pack. So if you're like, how does options work? How do I make them work for me? How do I protect my account when the market's falling? How do I supercharge my account when things are good? I would check out our stock option starter pack, and then you just go to thebrownreport.com. It's a 15-page PDF where I break down how options work, because a lot of people have a misconception that options are risky, and that's because they don't really understand how they work. So in that 15-page report, I break down how options work. And so that would probably be a good resource for anyone listening. Just go to thebrownreport.com, get the stock option starter pack. And you know, when this episode come out, I'd love to share it on our channel and with our audience as well. to send some eyeballs your way, because I appreciate us both being in the space and getting this information out to people.
Sweet. All right. Well, thanks again for popping on, Jason.
Awesome. I appreciate you, Matthew.
Yeah. Let me just...